There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Pure Hoops podcast most definitely does reflect the views of our management. Here's three-time NBA champ BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman.
The Pure Hoops podcast, we are back. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. You got in the post-meal workout after the hands on the stomach, lay on the couch, post-Thanksgiving meal malaise. BJ, talk to me about that smoked turkey, brother.
You know, I'm still laid out on the couch.
You're still not, you're still not right, huh?
Yeah, I'm still not right. But, you know, it was a wonderful time. It's always one of my favorite holidays with family, friends, and but it was great. Can't complain, and here we're back in the office, ready to go at another podcast, and let's get it, my friend.
Quickly, what was your emotional roller coaster like during the Lions-Bears thriller?
You know, I'm a Lions fan, so we are used, and we are. We've come accustomed to losing close games. Let's say we're conditioned, but all in all, I stick with my guys. Those are my Lions. We love them, and there's always next year. That's our motto.
The similarities with the Cleveland Browns is fourth string quarterback in Pittsburgh. No Schuster, no Connor. Still no win for the Browns.
I know, it's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable.
Thank goodness football does not resonate with us like basketball does. And obviously, you're at the point where you can't be a fan of a team, and I'm at the point where I've almost matured into a full-fledged adult. So watching the Celtics lose in Brooklyn on Friday didn't completely ruin my day, but they redeemed themselves Sunday at the Garden with a solid win over the Knicks. My man Marcus Smart went down with what will hopefully only be a hip pointer, but Celtics still fighting there at the top of the standings. But a lot more has happened since we last talked. James Harden gets 60 and three quarters. Joel Embiid goes through an entire game last week scoreless. Hassan Whiteside blocks 10 shots Friday versus Chicago. And the Portland Trailblazers with Carmelo Anthony have won three straight games. Granted, not the highest level of opponents. I believe it was Chicago twice. And correct me if I'm wrong, Mike Charlotte. This week, though, much more of a test for them. They've got the Clippers, the Kings, and the Lakers. So before we dig into the brilliance of James Harden for a moment, what are you seeing from Portland, and who can they be with Melo and Hassan Whiteside playing at the top of his game?
Well, again, you know, I've been a huge Carmelo fan from, you know, back in his day in high school, right? And watching him at Syracuse, and he's clearly had a unbelievable career. In saying that, you know, Eric, I don't know what to expect at a Carmelo at, 34, 35 years of age. It's certainly great to see him play at a high level versus the teams that you've mentioned here, and not taking away anything versus those teams and where they're at. But I think overall the Portland Trailblazers are looking for chemistry. They're looking for a way to get themselves back in the fold. They've been kind of, from a record perspective, they've been disappointing at the first half of the season. There's a lot of basketball to be played. Certainly, you know, that will be determined.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we're a quarter of the way through.
Yeah.
They're a disappointing 8-12 after 20 games. But the good news for them is – There's a long way to go, and as of today, they're two in the loss column out of the eight seed. So
exactly, but again,
they'll be right there. And just let me finish the point. They'll be right there. They'll just be right there, in a way, taking a journey that they definitely didn't expect.
Yeah, I'm gonna, you know, when you get to be that age, 34, 35, look, you go through, you know, some days he'll feel good, some days he won't. But I'm gonna lower my expectations. I'm happy for him to see him back playing, doing, I know, what he loves to do. I'm sure it's been a humbling experience for him in many ways. But again, let's see, you know, how this plays itself out. And there's a lot of basketball to be played.
There's one take that's out there, and I'm not saying it's some major media outlet or big personality, but, you know, in the basketball circles, in the quote-unquote NBA Twitter sphere, you know, you have people saying that analytics cost Carmelo a year of his career, meaning what happened last season. So I pose this question for you. It's great to see him back. He's found a fit that works. He was always rumored, and when I say always, the last 3 or 4 years, rumored that Portland would be a great fit. Do you think it was his attitude, the situation he was in, the way the game has continued to change as far as style and positioning, or a combination of all of those things that have led to this very odd chapter in Carmelo Anthony's career, one that he seems to be exiting and entering a new one right now to go down the home stretch?
You know, Eric, that's a great question. And, you know, when Carmelo was going through this, you know, phase of his career, it reminded me of something I learned a long time when I was playing. And, you know, life is change and change is life. You're going to change and how you have to play. And it reminded me when I first came to the NBA, you know, I was used to having the ball in my hands and I was used to playing and I was the playmaker and I was the first option. When I came to the Bulls as a young player, I quickly learned that I was never, ever going to be the first option again. There was another guy there.
a couple.
And then after that guy, there was another guy there. And I learned very quickly from a veteran, Bill Cartwright, who said, you know, if you want to have a career in the NBA, you're going to have to learn how to adapt. And you're going to have to learn how to play without the ball. And you're going to have to learn how to contribute to the game without having to score. And he said, and I remember him telling me this. He said, and the hardest guys, the guys who find it the hardest to adapt are the guys who become the first option on the offensive end in the NBA. And he said, that was my hardest adjustment when I left the Knicks, when I came here.
Hmm.
And he said, if you want to have a career, learn that immediately and you can have a career in this league. Because not many guys will be the number one option throughout their entire career. And I remember him saying that, and, you know, like most rookies, oh, yeah, whatever. And as I watched Carmelo Anthony, I was reminded of that. As I watched Allen Iverson, I was reminded of that. It is very difficult for the number one option to learn how to adjust.
Yep.
That is probably the most difficult transition in the NBA. Once you get a taste of that. And for other guys who have learned that lesson, whether they learned it knowingly or whether they consciously made that adjustment, you have to learn how to play in this league and contribute in other ways other than scoring the basketball. And I think for Carmelo, that has always been his Achilles heel, if you will, because he can score. We know he can score. That kid will be 40, 50 years old. He can score. He's a professional scorer. But what else can he do to contribute to the game outside of scoring? I think is where he is. I think that's the lesson he's probably learning. And I'm always reminded of that as I watch him now, because it's no doubt about it. He's an NBA player. He's an NBA talent. But how does he fit his talent now into the team that he's no longer the 25-point dominant scorer that he once was? And it's not to say that he can't do it every other night or, you know, whatever, you know, every now and then, you know, but it's tough. And then, you know, I at the end of my career, I played with another guy, Dominique Wilkins, and I saw the same thing. And it just reminds me of how important it is to be a well-rounded player as you enter into the later stages of your career, because you got to find ways to be productive, find ways to contribute, even though you're not getting the touches and scoring the ball on a consistent basis like you once did when you were younger.
Yeah, great points. You have me thinking, before we close this topic, you have me thinking about two all-time great players who, due to one to circumstance and one to, you know, being traded, they both went from number one to, you know, number two slash support guys and won a championship. And that's Clyde Drexler when he went to the Rockets. And that's David Robinson following the emergence of Tim Duncan. So interesting to think about that over the years to see who's done it. But, you know, we'll keep an eye on the Blazers. Correction, they've beaten the Bulls twice and the Thunder, not the Hornets. But we'll see what they do against tougher competition. And for Melo, him being able to play the Clippers and the Lakers this week, And Harrison Barnes too is a guy for the Kings who's emerging. He's gonna be fired up for this, as are his Blazer teammates. So this will be interesting. So James Harden, 60 points, I believe, 8 rebounds and 8 assists in 3 quarters. So obviously we think back immediately to Kobe's 81-point game in 2006 against Toronto. What scoring explosion do you go back to from when you were playing, when we're looking at what Harden did, not just the other night, but what he has the potential to do on any given night and just light up the scoreboard at the blink of an eye?
Well, you know, those are impressive numbers. And the most impressive part of it was he scored 60 points in like 30 minutes. So you're seeing that
that's crazy. Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, the way the game is played and the way they shoot threes and the way they play contributes to that. But 60 points is 60 points. I don't care how you get them and what system and style that you're playing. So that's an amazing accomplishment. Now, in saying that, what is the consistency in which he can do that when needed? You know, it's a regular season game versus the Atlanta Hawks. And you know what? You know, scoring 60 points in any game, let alone an NBA game, is impressive. But the fact that he's able to do that in that amount of time just speaks volume about what kind of offensive scorer he really is. Again, I always get back to the following. You know, when those shots go down, it looks great. But can they win? I always come back to them with the following. Can they win when those shots aren't going down? And you know, what else more can we say about James Harden offensively? I mean, he can score. That's what he does. He scores with distance. He's a great one-on-one player, isolation player. But does that really win in the playoffs? That's to be debated. And but you got to give credit where credit is due. 60 is 60, no matter how you slice it or dice it.
They scored 158 points as a team. Harden scores 60, and I know some people put a little too much into plus minus for games. He scored 60, and he was a plus 50 while on the floor against the Hawks. It's A, seeing historic performances is always something we like, but B, you know, we both wanted to see this Houston thing get off to a good start, meaning the Westbrook-Harden combination, and clearly it has. But to your point, we're going to have to see whether or not this style of play can get them where they want to go, which is to the Western Conference Finals and beyond. Speaking, my friend, of the Western Conference Finals, the red-hot Lakers had won 10 straight before dropping to Dallas on Sunday. L.A. this week, at Denver, at Utah, back-to-back, Tuesday and Wednesday. LeBron, all 20 games played, averaging 35 minutes a game, playing incredible basketball. His career average, just so you know, for minutes is 38. We thought it was going to be Anthony Davis and co. carrying the team through the season, and LeBron hitting the turbo button for the playoffs to get them out of the West. He's playing at such a high level right now, you can't fault this, but what are your thoughts about, what are your thoughts and what's your comfortability with the amount of minutes that LeBron James is playing right now?
Well, in the old way of thinking, I don't have a problem at all. He's only playing about, 34 or 35 minutes a night. I don't have it right in front of me, but I don't see that as a
35 a night. Yeah, 35. It might have gotten lost with my very long paced lead in.
So I don't.
I'm leading in today at the pace that Robert Parrish would go baseline to baseline.
Yeah, I don't think that's a big deal, especially the way they play. They're not getting up and down, like the Houston Rockets or some of the other teams that play with much more pace. So I'm okay mm-hmm. with where he's at. I'm okay the style that they play, his usage, so forth and so on. But the one thing that stood out to me about this game is that, you know, the Lakers, in my opinion, had an opportunity to make a statement versus a team they could potentially see in the first round of the playoffs. And
just to be clear, you're talking about the Dallas Mavericks on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Dallas Mavericks, yes. And they just played them, I think, like a week ago. And when you're a young team, you're always trying to measure yourself. That was a game that they, especially there in Dallas, that they were able to measure themselves. And the Lakers came down there and just put it right to them.
They took the game.
Took the game. Now when you get an opportunity to play that same team, you get an opportunity to make some adjustments. You get an opportunity to see the things that you could do better. And you look at how you played, how you prepared, and the coaches will point out a few things. And Dallas made some adjustments and came here and took it right to the Lakers. Now, people will say, well, that's just one game. But it's not just one game, because Dallas saw something that they could do against the Lakers. And they not only did it, they beat them convincingly at home. And that is a big game, because you never, ever want to give the opponent an opportunity to believe that they can beat you, especially at home.
Oh, you think about the confidence boost this is for them.
So now,
and you're getting contributions from Dwight Powell, from DeLon Wright, and from Justin Jackson, along with Kristaps and Luka.
Yes. So whatever Rick Carlisle and staff saw, they saw something. And they made an adjustment, and it was a big adjustment, and it wasn't a close game. I mean, they were up big in that game in the second half. And I'm a little concerned, and I'm going to go back to this game during the postseason, because this game to me shows that they have some weakness. I haven't dissected the tape or the film myself, but clearly there's something going on there when you lose like that big at home. And the Lakers have been playing terrific basketball. But when you lose against a team that you know or you have the potential to see, you make sure that you keep that guy down. And this, to me, was one of those games that caught my attention, because Dallas saw something, they know something, and now they believe that they don't believe it. Now they know they can come here and win on the road if need be. So I think
for sure
this is one of those games where people will be like, oh, you're making too big of a deal. I don't think this is too big of a deal at all, because they have the potential to see this team, and they're a young team, and they have energy. And when you have a young team and a star player like Luka Doncic, anything is possible. And clearly they're not afraid of the Lakers.
They're not. And you just dropped the old KG, anything is possible, which I always love. But looking at the... You know, people are always talking about, oh, you know, so-and-so, they've had an easy schedule to start. So-and-so, oh, they've had a tough schedule. What do you make of their 17-20 start? Is it a combination of friendly schedule versus tremendous talent? What are you really seeing from the Lakers, regardless of this 17-3 record? Who are they today as we start December?
Well, part of being a good team, Eric, is beating the team that you're supposed to beat. Check for the Lakers.
It's on the schedule, right? It's on the schedule, right?
Well, you beat the teams that you're supposed to beat. This team has pushed its chips all into the middle of the table. They're all in, right? This isn't we're not just trying to figure out who we are. They feel that they have a championship caliber team. And they're proving that as we speak. They're beating the teams they're supposed to beat. Now, am I convinced that they are the best team against the best teams? No. Do I see some things with the naked eye that say, you know what, this team can be beat in a 7-game series? Yes. But I do like their team. I like the way they play. And they've proven the first step. You win the games you're supposed to win. That's part of being a good team. Now, as the season goes on and they catch teams back to back and they play against teams who will begin to separate themselves and circle games. And when I say circle games, they'll mark those games. I say, we want to be ready for that Laker game. I think then we'll find out more about this team. But as of now, they're handling their business. They're taking care of their business and they're doing what they're supposed to do. But I'm still not ready to say they're the best team in the NBA based on what I've seen this early in the season. But they are a good team, and I give them credit for what they've been able to accomplish because that says something about them. They are, you know, it says something about their professionalism and how they view themselves. But what is that going to look like in a 7-game series versus, you know, the Clippers or versus, you know, the upper echelon teams in this league, because that's a whole different ball game.
So the Lakers are 17-3. There's another team, Mr. Armstrong, that is 17-3, the Milwaukee Bucks. And of course, there is another terrific team in LA, the Los Angeles Clippers. The schedule maker is very nice. They gave us this game coming up on Friday. Giannis versus Kawhi, Bucks versus Clippers. I think it's a measuring stick game for both teams. How important is this game for Giannis? How important is this game for the Clips?
Well, considering how much there's been said about Kawhi not playing in the previous meeting when the Bucks came out to play, I think the Clippers are going to point to this game. And I think this will make a statement for them to let the league know, not just the Western Conference, but the league know that we're for real. And we can beat anybody, anywhere. And this is a statement game to let everyone know that they are the best of the best. I make no doubt about it. I think Doc Rivers understands that. I think his team understands that. And this will be a game that no one in the league is really going to be saying, but I'm going to say it here. The league will be watching this game. They'll be watching those two players in particular, because this Giannis kid, I haven't seen a player that has caught my attention the way he has in a long time. This kid is averaging roughly around 30 points a game or so. But check this out here. He's shooting, 20% or so from the three, and he's shooting below 50 or 60% from the free throw line, and he's still averaging 30 points a game, and he's in first place.
He is at almost 31 a night with 13.5 rebounds, a touch under 6 assists, almost a block and a half, shooting 28 and change from 3, 56 from the floor, and struggling at 58-6 from the free throw.
Okay, now, Eric, now.
It's unbelievable.
We live in an era where we just got done talking about James Harden. And we're talking about how explosive of a player, and he has plus 50 in the plus minus and all that stuff. Here's a kid that clearly affects the bottom line. Here's a kid that has so much room to improve
MVP
on the offensive end, and he's still averaging 31 a game. He makes me nervous, Eric, as an observer of the game. Because this kid is a consistent jump shot away from taking over this league in a way that probably we've never seen. Now,
crazy.
He's doing
it. And they haven't. And just real quick, Brogdon is such a good player.
But
Malcolm Brogdon is such a good player, is showing it this year with the Pacers, and the Bucks have not missed a beat without him.
And this kid still, Eric, hasn't shot. He's not shooting like a high percentage, or he's not. Eric, this kid makes me really, really nervous, because not only does he put up massive numbers like we've never seen, he's doing it in a way, Eric, that clearly contradicts everything we talk about: pace and space and three-point shooting and all of those things. And here's a kid that's not shooting a three. Here's a kid that gets to the free throw line. I don't know how many times he gets there, probably double digits. He's shooting less than 60%, and he's still affecting the game in a way that affects the bottom line without a jump shot. And when he puts a jump shot to this, it's over for this league. So you better beat him now, because once he does that, Eric, this league, I think he's going to he's already terrorizing the league. I think he's just going to take it. I think he's going to make a run in the NBA like we haven't seen. I think he's going to make a run like we haven't seen, Eric, because he has the opportunity to evolve, because he can. I mean, think about it, Eric. He's now settled into the power forward position, but at one point during earlier parts of his career, he was a point guard. Eric, they gave him the ball as a point guard. Now, he can do so many things, and he's doing this, Eric, only playing literally half of the game, because he really doesn't have a jump shot yet. He's getting to the basket and dunking, and we all know he's going there. Left, right, whatever he's doing. He's affecting the game in an era, Eric, where everything is anti how he plays the game. We're all talking about threes, and we talk about step backs, and we talk about all of these things. And here's a guy, Eric, he does none of that. He does none of that.
Doesn't need to. And he's surrounded by shooters, and they have versatile size, and their roster construction is impressive. And being able to start the season 17-3, missing, like, you know, Eric Bledsoe's a good player. Malcolm Brogdon was the best guard on that team. So starting the season 17-3, not missing Brogdon. Giannis's free throw attempts are up from 9.5 a game to 11. His free throw percentage, this is interesting, BJ, his free throw percentage in 2017 was 77%. His free throw percentage in 2018 was 76. His free throw percentage in 2019, last season, touch under 73. And now he's struggling at 58 and change. So you'd have to think that he gets this up at least to the mid-60s as we go through this season. But you said it. He is a frightening talent.
Ugh.
He's wonderful to watch. It's tremendous, man, for that market to have a player and a team in Milwaukee. It's great for the league.
It's a great game to look forward to at this point in the season. Both teams, BJ, safe to say, have their own style, their own identity, their own star power, their own chip on their shoulder, and a lot's gonna go into this one on Friday. And you hit it with the fact that Kawhi didn't play the first time. I think this is gonna be a great matchup. And you best bet that Giannis and that Bucks crowd are going to be fueled up for this game on Friday. We have a lot of good matchups this week. A lot of good matchups through the week and the weekend, and the Toronto Raptors involved in a couple of those too. And they've won 7 straight. They've got the Heat, the Rockets, the Sixers, the next 3 games. So I put this question to you right now, BJ. You know, can they get back to the NBA Finals?
As a former player, I will say this: confidence is key to that league. Now, it's one thing we can say about the Raptors: they're not lacking confidence. When you watch Fred VanVleet, who's one of my favorite players, right? He's one of my favorite. He's not the fastest. He's not the strongest. But, man, is he a confident little kid. He is a confident player, whether he's playing against Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, Russell Westbrook, the man carries himself in a way that says, I belong, and I'm out here to prove it night in and night out. And I give that kid credit. So they have the confidence. I think they have a terrific coach and coaching staff, and they play the game from the defensive side. They tough, they get out, they defend, they work, and they have scores. I mean, this kid Siakam has shown that he is a player, right? We didn't know last year, you know, he was most improved, but now he's coming in to the games with this attitude. I know he's playing against the frontline defenses in this league now, where teams are gearing up to stop him, and he's still getting his numbers. So,
number one on the scouting report.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Last year, you know, he snuck up on some people. This year, he's not sneaking up on anybody. He's bringing his game, and he's bringing his A game. And so this kid is a player. Give Masai and his staff credit for putting this team together. I mean, Serge Ibaka has accepted his role as a starter. He's been a longtime starter in this league, and he's accepted his role, what he's been able to do coming off the bench.
And he's been out, and they're still winning.
Exactly. I mean, and Kyle Lowry's been out, and they're still winning. So this is a confident, confident group. They know they can win games because they can defend and get stops. And, you know, those are the type of teams where you don't like to play because they believe. And they believe that they can win. And we know that's a tough environment up there to win in Toronto, especially during the playoffs. It's a wild and ruckus type atmosphere. And anything is possible. Now that they've won a championship, they've been in game sevens. They've been down to the wire. So they're battle tested. And why not? They can absolutely win.
So, BJ, what I love about where we're at right now, you know, you're talking about the Raptors as a battle-tested team. They're 15-4. You know, in the East, the Bucks, the Raptors, the Heat, the Celtics, the Sixers, the Pacers, like, these teams are all going to continue to get better throughout the season as long as they're healthy. And then, obviously, we know the gauntlet in the Western Conference. And, yes, the Warriors have fallen out of it a bit, and the Blazers, well, not a bit, they've bottomed out, but the Blazers have started slow. They're coming back up. The Timberwolves have started better than I think people think. The Mavericks, obviously, right in the thick of it. We've got some really good teams and some really good ball being played right now. So a lot for us to continue to dig into, along with getting back to some of our favorite vintage stories. So great job today, my friend. Glad we both got the kinks out after Thanksgiving. As always, a special thanks to producer Mike Lieber, Bruce Bernstein, editor Benjamin Wolf, and the entire Pure Hoops Media team. Be sure to check out the Mike Wise Show on Mondays. The man himself, Mike Wise, bringing you new interviews coming up for this month of December. I know they're working on a notable player right now, so we'll keep an eye on that for next week. Catch and Shoot 2.0, we waited till after Thanksgiving. Coming at you soon with new hosts Aaron Berlin and Otto Strong. Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with the one and only Monica McNutt. And, of course, the Pure Hoops Podcast with BJ Armstrong and yours truly, Eric Newman, coming at you twice a week. Be brave out there with the weather, or at least on the East Coast. BJ, make sure you have your sunglasses ready out west. Have a great week, everybody, and stay pure, my friends. Peace.
The Pure Hoops Podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.